Blog Talk Radio.
Enhance your mind. Recharge your spirit. Awaken your soul. Enhancing Awareness Radio. Enhancing awareness with clarity.
Say good, I don't mean perfect. I mean that you're aware.
And when you say good, you mean positive.
I mean aware. Right. No good if you're not aware. even if you're positive. You could be emulating something positive. That's no good, you know. It's good when you're aware. I'm aware that I'm bad. I'm aware that I'm happy. I'm aware that I'm sad. I'm aware that I'm, you know, old. I'm aware that I'm new. You know, when you're aware, that's good. You know, that can take you to everything.
All right, royalty, 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 guys. Thank you guys for tuning in to another podcast of Hanson Awareness Radio. This is Spiritual Soul Sunday, and it's going to be a very interesting podcast. It's going to be a part two of narcissism, right? Narcissistic personalities, right? But before we dive into that, let's talk about this spiritual awakening, guys. I want to apologize for yesterday's podcast. It ended prematurely. I got some stuff going on this weekend. So, but I, in the video credits, guys, I leave the video credits because I, this is like Enhancing Awareness Radio is also like a networking platform to where I utilize lectures that I value, right? People that I love, that I value, that I've been watching for a long time that teach live on their YouTube platforms, and also people who I've studied over the years. So yesterday kind of painted a picture of history, right? Of history and kind of like what fast forward into kind of what may be. Because remember, you do your own research, what may be going on as to current events. Erykah Badu, which I think I'm going to play in a lot of episodes, to be aware, guys. That's why I named it Enhancing Your Awareness. So anyway, go back and check out yesterday's podcast, and then also utilize the video credits so you can draw your own conclusions and go subscribe to their channel, okay? All right, guys, channels. All right, so spiritual awakening, you know, what a lot of people may be growing through and don't understand, because that probably happened prematurely, or it may have been divinity, you know. I thought many of us are being forced to be aware, all right? So let's see. I love the video credits. Again, it's going to be in the show notes. But today, guys, we're going to be talking about covert narcissists. But we're going to talk about the covert aspect of it. And I got some interesting pointers. And the reason why I feel that these podcasts are coming up, because a lot of people are starting to become aware more. We talk about it on air a lot. Go back and look at the archives, guys. I've had Nicola Hurst on, who was great. On the podcast of narcissism, but type in Enhancing Awareness Radio Narcissist. All right. And you'll see that we've done several shows on it, breaking it down more of a, you know, one-on-one classroom type, right? Motivational classroom. That's what this is. That's what Saturday podcast is. This is Spiritual Soul Sunday, but it's still the same, right? But anyway, we're going to talk about covert narcissistic personality later, but first let's go ahead and dive in and see what my girl got to say about spiritual awakening.
I want to talk about,
all right,
welcome back to another video. You lovely souls, how y'all feeling today? How you feeling really matters. It matters more than most things that you may think that matters. So make sure that feeling good is your highest priority. I want to talk about how spiritual awakening, it's not always easy. It really ain't always easy, though. In the beginning, when you wake up, it's not easy at all. And I didn't understand none of what was going on. I didn't get why I was experiencing what I was experiencing. I didn't know why things were happening the way they were happening. Why was my body feeling different? Why was I feeling different? Why all of a sudden was I seeing the world in a whole nother way? And I just went on this deep, like, journey to, like, feeding myself knowledge, to understand what the heck was going on with me. And at the time, there wasn't many videos out there. There were a few people out there. Shout out to these lovely souls I'm so grateful for, because they started to speak to my soul in a way that helped me understand that I'm not crazy, because I was the only one, like, experiencing this in my, where I'm located, in my family. And it's not an easy thing. And there are some downsides, too, and I want to talk about that today, because right now on the planet, we got a lot of people waking up, so. Real talk. Check it out, what they put on the news about the chosen ones, the star seeds type stuff. You feel me? Because they're feeling a bit, well, they're scared. They're feeling a bit scared. And they thought they had a little jokey joke, but they've been doing stuff like this. You see, a lot of times, the whole time in our journeys here, y'all, they've been making fun of us on TV. Check out The Mask. Go back and watch The Mask and listen to the TV show whenever that, like, he's watching. It's the first Mask when he's watching TV. Listen to what they're saying. Actually, it's happening right now today. Listen to what his news channel, Jim Carrey's news channel, was saying on The Mask. And it's happening right now here today. And right now, they didn't crank it up, yo. On the TV show, they really making fun of people like us. And then they hit the news. Okay, we know what time it is. He's doing something right. You feel me? Check it out. Having a spiritual awakening is not easy, though. To all you lovely souls, I have some messages for you today who waking up or who cares about things that they've been experiencing when they started waking up, okay? Yeah, there's downsides to it. You know, waking up to the truth, finding out everything you were told is a lie, that's not easy. That's one of the biggest challenges. Every single thing you were told was a lie. That doesn't sit right with you. It doesn't feel well. It doesn't feel good, you know? Matter of fact, it hurts. Makes you, you know, feel like, how could I have not saw this happening? Why did I never see the clues? It's okay. Don't be hard on yourself. Many of us did not. That's why we're raising the collective consciousness right now here on the planet, so that people can then now see and be aware of what they may have never been aware of. And you souls who woke up earlier didn't understand what the heck you were feeling. Even when you wake up right now, you still may not understand what you're feeling. You wonder now, like, it's hard to trust anybody because you're like, dang, if everything I've been told was a lie, then what's the truth? Who real? Who fake? Who not? Question everything. Question everything that you believe in your life, no matter who taught it to you. Question it. The advice I want to give you, I encourage you to do that. I wish I would have known was to throw out that old program, right? What I mean by that is everything you thought you knew, throw it out. Throw it out so you can start fresh. That'll be the easiest thing for you, not going so back and forth with, is it real, is it not, is it true, is it not type stuff. If you want to go that way, go for it. But throw out everything, maybe throw out everything that you thought you knew and just start going on research, like following. Basically, your soul came here to receive knowledge. So it loves knowledge. So just go with what you feel and start to gain knowledge, because too much knowledge, I want to say to you, is not good. Because if you don't have the wisdom just yet for the knowledge that you are receiving, it will totally confuse you. And I had to go back in because I gained too much knowledge. I did not have the wisdom of it yet. I had to go back in and throw all that out. Because I don't know, was that my belief or somebody else's belief once again? So follow what you feel. Whatever you're striking curiosity about, whatever you're questioning, follow what you feel and gain that knowledge. You wouldn't take your time with it. I encourage you. And I want to tell you this because I wish I would have known this. Patience is key. This is a self. Like, this journey is always going, you're always going to be self-improving. You're not looking for a destination. You're not chasing a destination. It's not just going to be over like that. I wish I would have known that, because I thought that after I experienced a few things, after that, I'll be done. I won't have to, you know, I can live my life type stuff. You know, I just thought, I can do this. I can wake up, do this, and I'm done. I ain't got to work on myself no more. I'm good. No, it don't even work like that. I watch out for spiritual bypass when you first wake up. It's easy to bypass and not be aware of tapping into and feeling those emotions that you feel that are arising to actually understand them. It's easy to want to go jump into learning about the law of attraction, learning how to manifest and all these things that will not work for you because you won't be a vibrational match to things that you actually want until you clear out a lot of energy that is within you that has to go so you can make space for these things. So I was over here trying to manifest and it was never working. And you will get discouraged by that. It'll make you want to give up. So I want to give you these pointers that I wish somebody would have told me. Don't. You feel me? Spiritual awakening is not always easy. It has its downsides. Find out your family really don't got you like you thought. Find out the truth about your family. Find out that some of your family really, like, just really, I want to say it the right way. Find out that your family is just there to teach you the truth. Some people have family they were brought up in that talked to them about spirituality, talked to them to retreat, and did things like that. God, man, much love to you souls. Most people did not have that. They had narcissistic parents, and you felt like the black sheep in your family, like nobody understood you, nobody got you, you ain't rocking what they believed in. You just followed along with it because you had no choice when you were a kid. Now you got a choice. You don't have to follow everything that they taught you. You do not have to believe everything that they taught you to believe. I would encourage you to question all your beliefs. Believe is the most powerful force on this planet. This is how realities are created, the things that you believe in. That's how they got us in the first place. Got us believing in a whole bunch of fake stuff. You see how powerful your belief is? When you start to believe in a whole bunch of stuff that's fake, you see how that did us. You see how it is. So question all your beliefs, because what you believe matters. So make sure your beliefs are supporting who you are and not who somebody told. Make sure your beliefs are supporting you and not what somebody told you you had to believe type stuff. It's very scary. I'm going to say the word. It's very scary because you don't know how you're feeling. You don't know what's going on. You don't have nobody to turn to in your environment. Now, thank God there's people like me and other souls speaking it online. There's more people awakening now. That's the power for it. If you're someone who's starting to awaken right now, you got that advantage to know that you're not alone. You know what I'm saying? Because the people in your environment, you probably be rare, right? You're rare. Like, nobody else is having this experience that you're experiencing right now. And the one toughest thing for most people, like, especially like my clients that I work with, and especially for me, was like finding out that you wasn't tripping, because something about your family, you always knew this, right? You probably always knew the way that they was treating you. If you had a narcissistic mother or father or whatever, you probably knew however they was treating you was wrong, that it wasn't right. You know, you probably used to look around at other kids and wish that, you know, you had that type of family, that type of love that you saw them, that type of life that they had, which made you try to compare yourself to other people. You kind of always knew you were different than most people. But finding out that your family really don't got you like you thought is a big challenge for many people. Many people stay stuck here because it's hard for them to believe that their family do not got them. And they'll stay stuck there. But you got to understand your family, and you are feeling this is resonating with you. If you stay stuck with that type of family, I want to tell you this. They only want you to be the version of them that is suitable for them. They don't want you to be your greatest version, okay? So be mindful that it's not worth staying stuck with the wrong people around you, regardless of who they are, because you are rare and you are on a mission, and you came here to discover your truth and to find your true authentic self, and nobody is worth keeping you stuck. So really question that for yourself, because this keeps many people stuck because they think they tripping. You not tripping with your feeling. Your feelings are real. You see, many of you are even psychic, and you might not even know it because you don't believe it. Because people say you tripping because people tell you that stuff's not real and it's evil and all that stuff. People don't know what they be talking about. They just say a whole bunch of stuff that just pushes people away from the truth. Many of you are psychic. You can feel stuff. You know, you can feel when you walk into a room, you can feel like that tension in the air. But tension in the air in the room you walk in, you can feel it. And you've always been able to. So now is the time to not put your trust into many and put your trust into yourself. And don't believe what people try to tell you what's real and what's fake. Trust what you're feeling inside and take that walk on your path. So don't let your family hold you back. Take the labels off. Your friends, anybody, take the labels off and see their spirit, okay? Spiritual awakening. It's not always easy because they got a downside, though. You know, having to let go of everything you thought was normal and detaching from the matrix. It's challenging because at first you start to experience boredom because everything that you used to do for fun was tied into the matrix and it no longer interests you. And it can make you feel depressed because you don't know what makes you happy. Because you've been maybe using substances to make you happy, maybe drinking alcohol to make you happy, being around a lot of fake people just to make you happy. You thought, you know what I'm saying, this is all, nobody can really truly make you happy because happiness really lies within you. But we believe that we receive happiness through relationships. So when you start to let go of these people and things and situations, you start to feel depressed. And sometimes it's hard to laugh again, smile again. And you wonder, like, why am I feeling like this? I'm giving up these things to just feel like this. This is just the process, my friends. This is just the way your path is unfolding. And it's okay because it's not always going to be like that. You see, you got to let go of a lot of old stuff, and then you'll discover the real you. You feel me? You'll learn what you like, what you enjoy. You're gonna go on this amazing adventure to discover all that. So really be patient with yourself, and don't be hard on yourself on this journey. These messages that I'm giving to you right now, I've experienced beforehand. And I feel it's very important to give this to you because spiritual awakening is not always easy, right? It comes with some downside. You know, seeing the pain. You start to see the pain in others. You start to see this world differently. You start to, you also feel alone, and you're never really alone. Call on your angels. They need you to call on them because you got free will here. You got thousands of angels ready to work with you, ready to guide you. Employ them. Lead them. Tell them you need their help. They are there for you. You got all this from one of you. You got all those angels there waiting for you, but you got to ask permission give them permission to connect with you while you're here on this planet, because you have free will here. So you wake up and you start to feel alone. You start to see the pain in other people, and it's sad. You want to go to this like place, depending on wherever you are right now. You know, you go through this place where you feel like you want to change everybody. You want to help everybody. You want to save the world. You want everybody to know this truth, and you don't understand why they don't open up to it. This can be very frustrating, I tell you, because you think that you're supposed to do that because of who you truly are and what's in your heart. You know what I'm saying? Who your soul is, but it's not. You just keep focusing on you and your journey because they're not ready yet. That's just all it is. I wish somebody would have told me that, though, because spiritual awakening is not always easy. It comes with a downside. No one seems to get you. People around you do not seem to get you. It's like you don't have nobody to talk to. Nobody express what you're feeling inside. And then expressing it don't come easy. It's like you don't really know the words on what you're really feeling. And that is frustrating. It's frustrating itself, you know, because this stuff ain't always easy, man. It's hard at first. You feel like you're crazy because your conscious mind, the logic mind, the realistic mind can't take the truth, because we be all up in our head trying to process stuff that our conscious mind just cannot process. We got to get down in our bodies and in our hearts. Your conscious mind does not know you, and it will never understand the moves you be making. I'm trying to tell you that right now in advance, okay? You also start to wonder why people around you not feeling what you're feeling. Why is it just me? Why is it just happening to me? Why nobody else seeing this? Why nobody else feeling like this? Why nobody else talking about this? You start to lose friends and family and other things, not understand why is this happening. Why am I losing everything? Why am I having to give things up? Why am I having to let things go? What's happening to me? Is this my fault? Did I do something wrong? No. Because everything that leaves is not a part of who you really are. I'm going to say that one time. Everything and everybody that leaves is not a part of who you really are. If you watch Tarot or Oracle cards, you'll see the tower moment when things crash down. That's what it is. It's like everything is crashing down around you that was built a lie in your life. That's not really who you are, and that's what's going on. I wish somebody would have told me that, though. You find out all alone you really know nothing. This one hit me deep because I always thought I was right. I always thought I knew it all. I used to always help people and do all these things. I thought I was helping people the best I could. Actually, I was able to help people, but not the way I'm able to do it now. But my point is, I thought I knew what I was talking about back then. I thought I knew it all. I even always made sure I was always right, only to find out I knew nothing when I woke up. This saddened me because I felt like I knew nothing. I did not know where to start. I did not know where to go. I didn't know where to turn to. I turned to meditation. And this really started to help me let go of things that was there blocking me because I wanted to get to the next level. And as I was doing this, I had no clue. I was actually raising my vibrations, my consciousness. And every time I would get to a third, I would meditate for 2 hours in the beginning. And every time I would get to another level, something would appear there, like, and I would have this inner knowing that I need to let this go. So then I would let that go and move. And I would go work on letting that go. And then I meditate. If I didn't let it go, I couldn't move up. And I'm like, and so then I would let it go. And then I would move up. And I'm like, oh, man. Is this real? And I noticed that pattern. So everything is happening for you. It's really not. It's like it's happening to you. It's like life's not happening to you. It's happening for you. Real talk, I wish I would have known that. So finding out that everything, thinking that you knew everything, or thinking, and just to find out you knew nothing, is saddening. And you thought you had things figured out. You thought you understand this life stuff a bit. You're probably getting some things together, even though you really didn't feel good inside. You felt depressed and anxiety and all other things. You were numb, probably. And although you felt that, it still doesn't sit right when you start to realize you knew nothing all alone and you don't have things figured out. And it might make you feel a bit dumb, but you're not dumb. And you're not crazy, and you're not tripping. What's happening is we have to know what I love to say every day, I know nothing, so that we can open up to receive. Because if we think that we know it all, then we cannot receive any messages from the Most High God, the universe, and from our source and our team, because we think we know it all. So our cup is too full to even receive. So that's a good thing that this is happening to you, so that you can start receiving the real truth of who you are, the real truth about your life, and the truth about what's really going on out here. So you're not tripping and you're not dumb, although it feels that way. You start to see the world differently from a new lens. And you may be moody, irritable, depressed, and sometimes you may feel like you wish you never even woke up. It's hard at first, but I want to tell you it's a beautiful thing, and it gets better, and you're not alone. You're not tripping. Don't give up and continuously focusing on you, because where focus goes, energy flows, and really tap into the world within you. And like I say, call on your angels, because you are not alone. You are just waking up, and it could be challenging for people because, like I say, it depends on how strong your mind is. And if you don't have such a strong mind at that time or whatever, it could be very hard for you. So really, I would encourage to drop down in your heart and connect in within to your intuition, which is connected to your soul, to your source, your team, the Most High God, the universe. Like, really connect. Like, set the intention and say, I'm connecting to my angels. I'm connecting to the Most High God of the universe. I am connecting to my soul, my higher self is what I call it. Set the intention so you know exactly who you're connecting to. Because if you don't set intentions, you have no idea who's sending you messages. And the ego, in the beginning stages, loves to present itself. And watch out for people who are feeding your ego unconsciously. You may not be aware of it because it's a temporary feel-good. It's a temporary feel-good, but it blocks your soul. I wish I would have known this, so I hope this was helpful for you, though. Like this video if you like this video and if it's resonating with you, so we can get this video out to more lovely souls like yourself. We're looking for this message because they found us up, though. Hey, check this out. Follow me on Instagram at Miss Kelly Travel Spiritually. And share this video with anyone you want to share this video with. And if you're watching my videos, find the messages here, consider joining the Pure Clarity Mindset family by hitting that subscribe button and that bell, baby, because on this channel, we're getting out of my own right. I'm just here spreading my truth, awareness, and love and light with you. I love you. It's all going to work out for you, you beautiful, lovely soul. And I know it's a challenge at first, but your time is coming and on your path. Everything in your life is getting you ready for whatever is unfolding for you. It really is, even when it don't make sense. Trust life and trust that everything is happening in divine timing. I love you all. Peace, love, and light to you. Much love.
All right. All right. I hope you guys enjoyed that. I wanted to play that first because I love, you know, when it comes to current events and things that's happening, I like to keep, you know, my audience abreast, right, on the currency, the current, well, shit, that is currency, spiritual wealth. Spiritual wealth is the real currency, right? So, all right, guys. So, as I told you today, we're going to be discussing narcissistic personality, okay? And this one is covert, all right? And again, go back and listen to my podcast. We've done several where I had a team here on here with me at Ear, where we used to do interviews and stuff on these topics. So go back and type in the Hanson Awareness Radio in your Google bar, and you can type in narcissistic or narcissism, narcissistic. I believe that's what it's under. And you'll pull up, you know, a few podcasts, all right? So go back and we'll listen to that. So, again, guys, today we're going to be talking about covert. And personally, I am just now studying covert. I know I've studied another thing to study is dark psychology 101. That's like a class that you want to just first, you know, kind of see the inner workings on how it works, how people use tactics to manipulate you and gaslight you. Go back and listen to my podcast that I did on gaslighting. Like, manipulation is real. Projections are real. To be aware, as Erica said, right? It's one thing to know, but it's one thing to truly be aware, okay? So, I had took some notes, and on my notes, what did we got? All right. Learning narcissistic personality is not a disorder or mental illness, but rather a personality spectrum. I'm not sure where I got that from. There are good narcissistic personality traits, and then extreme, which is considered the bad personality traits. Narcissism means love of self, which isn't a bad thing. However, when it shifts to a destructive behavior and your self-love is from an egotistical aspect, that's when it becomes a problem. Just a little bit of knowledge when it comes to the term. I think Renee Hamilton wrote that. But, yeah, you know, I like to look at everything in balance, you guys. And as even over my years, I'm like, okay, why do I keep attracting? Like, there has to be a message that I keep attracting this type of personality trait. And, you know, then one day I looked at myself and I was like, you know what, Keith? You know what, Haru? You know, what is it about you that you are not seeing as far as the narcissism personality traits that you may have within yourself? Aha. You know what I mean? Your vibe attracts your tribe, right? So what do we at times subconsciously miss about ourselves, but we want to, you know, put that one finger out and when it's three pointing back at us? Self-accountability. You know what I mean? So I like to pose to people, although we may attract or we may have narcissistic people in our lives, you know, what is it about ourselves even that we are accepting that type of treatment? You know what I mean? Or the fact that we don't look within ourselves and see how we may even project narcissism onto the world, our very own self. Okay? All right, and then I took some more notes of there are eight types of people you should get rid of. And remember, I want to say that eight types of people, it's one thing to set boundaries for ourselves, you know what I mean? Is it about ourselves even that we attract it? That's what I like to, you know, that's just for me, y'all. All right, number one, those people who spread negativity, yeah, those gossiping Bettys, you know what I mean? So people who just have nothing positive to say, or even if it's something positive to say, it's at a minute level, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, give people their flowers, but it's kind of like, you know, they may give you money just to, you know, show their gratitude or something like that, but it's like never enough. You know what I mean? It's just like it doesn't seem real, or it seems like they're, what's the catch here? You know what I'm saying? So those who spread negativity, those who make you always feel like you're not good enough or you're never going to be good enough, or even play mind tricks on you. You know, just that low vibe type of personality. It's something that you can feel, you know. I always stand up for myself and I always tell people, hey, if people don't accept you for who you are in your 360, then it's not even worth it, right? So watch out for those who spread negativity on a constant basis, all right? Those who complain a lot. Number two, those who criticize you all the time. You can never be good enough. That's what I was saying. Those who waste your time, people that just intentionally just, you know, I don't know if it's unknowingly. I think a lot of it is knowingly, really. Like some people, you know, get a hard on with wasting your time. They say wasting your time, but I like to say planning your energy, or, you know, just ruffling your feathers. Some people get off on just ruffling your feathers, you know, like the bully that just likes to pick at you. That does not stop, you guys. That happens even in your adult life, and it's unknowingly because it's masqueraded as different types of things that we project. So be very aware, guys. So, those who waste your time. Number four, those who are jealous. That jealous spirit, baby, is something you can feel, you know. It's something you can feel. I used to always think, you know, are people really jealous? And then I started to observe, remember, self-accountability. I started to observe why I was jealous. And it hit me one day. One of my good friends got married, and I was literally jealous of the whole thing. And I was like, why the fuck? You know, like, I examined, because I don't do that, you know what I mean? I like to see everybody win. But this time it was different, so I had to examine it. And just if you know that you have, like, a jealous spirit, you know what I'm saying, just self-examination helps with that, you know? I mean, it's like a human experience, you know what I'm saying? We all may get it. or we all may experience it, but how are we going to react to that? Those number five is those who play the victim. Number six, those who don't care. You know, it's people that really don't, like, really don't give a fuck. Like, don't. You know what I'm saying? We really got those people out there, so be very mindful of those types. It's just what they do and who they are. Those who are self-centered, that's that imbalance, what she was just talking about on their YouTube, you know, those who just love themselves. I don't know, she was talking about, no, I was just reading it. That self-love, but the self-love, narcissism means love of self, which isn't a bad thing. However, when it shifts to a destructive behavior and your self-love is from an egotistical aspect, that's when it becomes a problem. So that aspect of, you know, vanity and all of that, you know, just, you know, to each their own, okay? Number eight, those who keep disappointing you. Yeah. And remember, guys, I was telling you, some people do things intentionally. Some people do things at a subconscious level. So they're may not be aware. But really, guys, I think even in this human experience, I think that it comes times to where we are fucking aware. Like, people know what the fuck they're doing, even with myself. Self-accountability again. I was like, okay, you know, I was like, okay, bitch, you need to snap out. Like, you, this is my old self talking, y'all. I don't call myself bitch anymore. But I'm just saying, it's just something you do to kind of snap out of it. Like, okay, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? You know what I mean? Self-accountability is very important. All right, so now that we kind of set the stage to this topic, guys, we're going to hone back into covert. Okay, there's different branches of that, of a tree, the narcissism tree, right? So covert narcissist. Let's take a listen.
Hi, everyone. It's Dr. Romani, and welcome back to this series on the types of narcissists. This series really is in response to the many people who wanted a deeper dive on different sorts of narcissistic types. And my goal here is not only to talk about it, but what it looks like in your close relationships, your family relationships, your professional relationships, where these come from, how do we get drawn in, and ultimately, how to manage it. Today, we're going to be taking on the topic of covert narcissism. But before we get there, I ask you always please hit that subscribe button and join this wonderful community learning about narcissism. And also hit that bell and you'll get notifications each time we put out new content. So let's talk about what everybody wants to know more about, covert narcissism. The concept of covert narcissism. And it's also been termed vulnerable narcissism, is a more recent evolution in our understanding of the topic of narcissism and narcissistic personality in general. Now, in a word, so we're going to break it down, because that word covert is tricky, so we often think it means hidden. These are the victimized, vulnerable, anxious, socially less skilled, sullen, and resentful narcissists. The concept of vulnerable or covert narcissism has arisen in about the last 20 to 25 years as researchers pointed out that our traditional sort of DSM-y conception of narcissism solely on the traditional grandiose narcissist, which we've already talked about, that sort of shiny, charismatic, confident, charming, witty, attractive textbook narcissist. But what these researchers did a beautiful job of pointing out, and these include really heavy hitters in the field, Lonningham, Campbell, Miller, Pincus, they all noted that this misses the boat on a big part of the clinical picture of the narcissist. It misses the group of narcissists that lack that same level of social skill and finesse, who lack the charisma, who lack the charm. And in fact, they often present as somewhat depressed, victimized, or even needy. They also display other negative mood states, such as irritability, hostility, anxiety, and even sadness. However, they are narcissistic, so they have the same themes and grandiose buddies. They are still grandiose. They are still arrogant, entitled, validation-seeking, but it looks and it feels different when you're in their presence. For example, the grandiosity comes out in a more backdoor manner. They say something like, you know what? I would have been the best in the business if I had just had a trust fund like him, or I just had someone giving me money for my business. Or they say things like, I'm so smart that it's a total waste of my effort to even show up at an hourly job. It's beneath me. I'm too good for that kind of simpleton work. Their entitlement also has a very victimized feel. So they may say things like, oh, I shouldn't have to take the time to take this ridiculous programming class given that the professor doesn't know what he's talking about and I can program circles around him. I should really just get credit for the class because I'm a top-flight programmer. Okay, they say that. Now, their arrogance comes out as an antagonistic listing of all of the gifts they have that they believed were never recognized. And they will often, in a very contemptuous manner, dismiss the opinions and the knowledge of other people. Their validation seeking consists of a lot of sort of gloomily sharing what they believe their unseen gifts and skills and contributions are. And in fact, they are often the toxic person who sits around and says that they know better than any of the experts on any number of issues, or will constantly criticize people who attempt something, try something, take a chance, or who are aspiring to do something with their lives. It's interesting because the covert narcissists themselves will never take those risks, but they will mock people who do. Now, apparently, covert narcissists never got the memo that opportunity comes to those who seek it, and rather, they just sort of grumpily sit at home wondering why their ship never came in. These are the folks who sit at home and wait for opportunity to magically show up at their door and knock, knock, knock. And in that way, they can feel quite angry, resentful, and sullen when they watch other people succeed in a way that they aren't succeeding, and they will often dismiss the hard work and the efforts of other people who have really put in the time, the effort, and the energy. In fact, they will often attribute other people's success to that other person's just good luck, not their abilities, and they will attribute their own lack of success to bad luck and the fact that the world is out to get them. Now, they are not ever going to be able to notice, though, that other people are putting effort into something. They don't even entertain that hypothesis. Now, simply put, covert narcissists are chronic malcontents. They are never satisfied or content with anything. And that dissatisfaction comes out as criticism, complaining, contempt, anger, dismissiveness, frustration, all kinds of negative kinds of mood states and displays. They will complain about everything, and that makes life a miserable experience for anyone who has to spend time with them. And then when you throw on top of that their tendency to chronically view themselves as victims, it is feels darker and heavier and more morose than many of the another pattern that is commonly observed in covert narcissists is their passive aggressiveness. Now, while their grandiose and malignant narcissistic buddies are more likely to kind of just tell you off to your face, tell you you're stupid to your face, or tell you that you don't know anything, the covert narcissists are more likely to do this in a sullen backdoor way. They'll say things like, oh, must be nice to have a family that just always bails you out. Must be nice to get overpaid for your job. Must be nice that you have such a big house. You get the idea, on and on and on. And it's also quite manipulative. Now, there is a tremendous hypersensitivity observed in covert narcissism. In fact, this hypersensitivity to any kind of feedback, this is one of the patterns that will emerge in a relationship with a covert narcissist early on. They will often be lashing out at the world and always saying how unfair the world is. But one fine day, when you decide that you are done with watching them sitting there acting like a victim all the time, and you just say, you know what, just do something. Instead of complaining, just do something, they will typically react with absolute rage. They are very vulnerable in the face of any kind of feedback, constructive criticism, anything like that. And their hypersensitivity in the face of that can look almost like paranoia. They truly believe that everyone is out to get them, and they live their lives in line with that assumption. They really walk around saying, the world is against me. Now, covert narcissists are prone to chronic argumentativeness, especially around issues that may be polarizing and inflammatory. For example, they are the ones who constantly want to go at it around politics, religion, or current controversial news issues of any kind. And it's interesting because they will often vacillate back and forth. At times, they will be very self-righteous in their debates. You know, they'll say, you know, you're an awful person. I can't believe you'd say such mean things. How can you be such a hater? But then they are not at all able to see the irony at when they start escalating and becoming more and more unkind in their argument with you and hit you with contempt and verbal abuse and even insults. They don't see that. As a rule, covert narcissists are very judgmental. And that judgmental quality often arises from the place of their own entitlement and their chronic feeling that they never got a fair shake from life and that they are owed more from the world. That sort of fuels this toxic energy in them with judgment about issues in other people's lives, all kinds of issues. And these can include anything you could imagine, including, once again, their politics, other people's opinions, lifestyle factors, or their diet, their exercise, their weight, their appearance, the products they purchase, the things they wear, the jobs they hold, what other people's children do. Honestly, absolutely is nothing off limits with their judgment. Their judgmental nature is actually what often fuels their argumentativeness. And all of this is a manifestation of their sullen arrogance, their insecurity, their chronic dissatisfaction, their entitlement, and their quiet rage that just floats under the surface. Now, these relationships are particularly abusive because they can become quite isolating and isolated. Now, covert narcissists, as a rule, are not particularly warm and gregarious and welcoming and outgoing. They are not naturally extroverted. They are not naturally drawn to groups of people. And they will not be on board with your desire to spend time with groups, with friends, with family, to go to parties, or to attend social gatherings. And what they do, though, is they will often speak really contemptuously of these social experiences you may want and even use your interest in those activities or those get-togethers as a way, as a manipulation to attempt to induce guilt from you and also to insult you. So they might say things like, Why do you always want to spend time with other people? Aren't you interested in our relationship? Why don't you just want to spend time with me? Oh, I get it. I just need lots of attention. You get off on the attention from other people. I guess you just need that to feel better about yourself. That kind of conversation, that kind of interchange with someone leaves you feeling uncomfortable, devalued, and even just having any experience in your life, the experience of going to a party or a gathering or an event, it gets diminished before you even get out the door. And God forbid you actually get them to agree to go to a social event with you. You can plan on them sitting sullen in the corner, making insulting and contemptuous comments about the people that are at the gathering or the things that they are enjoying or the things they're talking about. And they will spend their evening just like a little poison creature in the corner tossing passive-aggressive barbs out about what is happening and looking so uncomfortable that you succumb to leaving the event early just to get them out of there because it's making you even more miserable looking at their misery. Now, this process can happen slowly and quietly without you realizing it. And then one day you lift your head and realize you no longer really have a social world you participate in, just the small and angry world that you occupy with the covert narcissist. So that really begs the question, why would anyone be drawn to them? Let's face it, these are not the shiny narcissists who draw us in with their charm and charisma and confidence and all the rest of it. In fact, here you may be drawn in just because you kind of feel sorry for them. You feel bad for them. They may talk about themselves and portray themselves as a person for whom life never quite worked out the way they wanted, or they may present themselves as being very sad or anxious. People are often drawn to covert narcissists because they may want to rescue them. You may, for example, tell them that, oh, God, no, you shouldn't feel that way. I see all this potential in you. And it's such a shame that the other people in your life don't see it. Like, you really might say those things to them because you kind of feel bad for them. You may even put yourself in a precarious position, lending them money because they portray themselves as a victim that nobody ever gave a break to. And so you can feel like you can sweep in there and be that rescuer for them. It's a very big part of the manipulation of the covert narcissistic pattern, how they sort of evoke that. And it can also feel very empowering for you to think that you can rescue them. And for a moment, while they may drink up your validation, and you might say, oh, look, I rescued them. It's pavilion. Look at me. Soon enough, they will find examples once again of how the world let them down and once again return to their victim identity. Covert narcissists are very contemptuous of close relationships and of the idea that they would ever need anyone. So you will often sort of feel this sense of dismissiveness from them. And when you don't do enough for them, they once again retreat to the role of being a victim. And then once again, you become one more person on a long list of people who has let them down. And complicating all of this is that most people who are in a relationship with somebody who is a covert or vulnerable narcissist often will not initially view them, or even for a long time view them, through the lens of narcissism. Instead, they're more likely to focus on the negative mood symptoms. You know, they'll assume like, oh, no, it's not narcissism. They're just depressed, and they show their depression by being irritable. And no, they just have really low self-esteem. Empaths in particular can be quite vulnerable to covert narcissists because it plays into the idea of rescuing someone who seems as though they have been let down by life. And the empath, who often has a very kind unwillingness to walk away from someone who seems sad, will often stick around and just start throwing bad money after good while they keep trying to rescue a covert narcissist. Now, covert narcissists may also share tales of sadness, neglect, and even trauma that go back to childhood. They may have families of origin characterized by psychological abuse, unfeeling parents, experiences with significant abandonment, and trauma. They, interestingly, may share this information very early in the relationship. And that can result for anyone in this kind of relationship with them in a sense of cognitive dissonance between feeling a real empathy for their history and for their pain, and then over time, a real sense of exhaustion from having to manage their ongoing sullen anger and a real sense of pain that you're enduring from their ongoing verbal and psychological abuse. Ultimately, you may find yourself making justifications and rationalizations for their bad behavior so that you don't have to deal with the guilt of letting them go. So slowly you convince yourself that it's the right thing to do to stay, or maybe it's not that bad, or at least he's not cheating on me. If you've been in a relationship with a covert narcissist, you already know the drill. So, gang, this is just part one of this series, and I hope it's setting the tone for what the covert narcissist is about. It's really almost manipulation through victimhood, and many of you watching this are already probably saying, I know those patterns, and some of you, I hope, this has been a wake-up to, I had no idea. Is that what this is? So stay tuned. Part two is coming out tomorrow.
And we'll give you Problem Pop to play part two.
Come on over, subscribe to this channel, hit that subscribe button, hit that bell, get those notifications.
All right, guys. I don't know about you, but just listening to that, okay? Again, y'all, I'm one that's about self-accountability. What parts of self do I identify with this frequency or this energy, okay? So that's the awareness, right? So I myself pointed out a few things that I still do sometimes that I have to check myself on. You know what I mean? So what did you point out for your own self, right? So, again, awareness, enhancing your awareness. So part two, let's see what she says about this. This is three parts, I believe. Let's see. The covert is not talked about a lot. Yep, three parts. So let's see what she says in part two. Remember, take notes. What is it? Self-accountability. What traits? You know, because if we are manipulative in certain ways, such as emotion, such as, you know, I would, just to share one of mine, I would play victim to circumstance that I created, by the way. And, you know, that's how I would, that would be the doorway to my manipulation madness, if you will, okay? And I had to check myself again because I kind of still do it sometimes, right? So this is how this energy, we're able to kind of be on the same frequency with that energy. So if we take self-accountability and love ourselves in balance enough to where those type of personality traits wouldn't even want to be in our frequency field. You know what I mean? So, again, this is why self-accountability is important. All right, part two.
Hi, everyone. It's Dr. Romney. Welcome back to this three-part video on covert narcissism. In part one, we sort of laid out what it is, what it looks like, what the manipulations are like, and what all the top notes are. It looks a little bit different than other forms of narcissism. Today, we're going to keep on going with that so you have more understanding of covert narcissism. This entire type series is meant to do a deep dive on the various, I think we're going to get into eight different types of narcissism. As always, before we get started, I'm going to invite you to subscribe to this channel, hit that subscribe button, hit the bell to get notifications every every time we put out a new video. So let's keep talking about covert narcissism. Now, obviously, this can happen in a variety of settings, but in a family relationship, having a covert narcissistic parent or other family member, sibling, aunt, uncle, grandparent, anything, can be very challenging. And as a child, this can be experienced as having a parent who is never happy and is always angry and is always complaining about how life is not fair. It is exhausting and it is demoralizing to grow up that way. And as you transition into adulthood, their ongoing tirades about forever being a victim can actually build up inside you and sort of result in chronic feelings of guilt that will color this relationship with that family member or parent. Any covert narcissist in any family system is simply exhausting. The relationship is a constant back and forth between guilt, exhaustion, and fear of their anger, as well as helplessness that you can't fix everything. Another key hallmark of the covert narcissistic parent is that they will compete with you in a cruel and passive-aggressive manner. So instead of being proud of you, which is never going to happen with a covert narcissistic parent, or even the way a grandiose narcissist will, they'll view you as sort of an extension of themselves and view you as a source of supply, the way a grandiose narcissist will, because you make them look good if you do something, you do something well. That's not how it is with the covert narcissistic parent. The covert narcissistic parent most likely will become somewhat jealous. They may actually undercut and undermine your accomplishments. And they might even say things like, oh, well, if I had been supported like you, not only would I have won that award, my goodness, I would have excelled at everything. Or, of course, you're doing well in school. It's because you aren't growing up in the absolutely awful way I had to grow up. I would have gone on to do great things if it hadn't been for how awful my childhood was. And in that way, anything that you achieved as a child gets invalidated and besmirched because they turn it into one more polemic about their victimhood and their suffering. They may also become really sullen and really petty and resentful when you get recognized or complimented by other people. Simple as a passing compliment by a teacher or a friend or a family member, or it could be at a much larger level, maybe a big award you got at a big ceremony. You may even be the honoree for something, and then after the lights go off and the ceremony's done, then you have to endure your parent berating you the entire car ride home, or they will project their pathology onto you. Oh, you really do need a lot of attention, don't you? I guess you think that now you're all that now that you won that prize. Well, I can still see that you're still you. You better not get too uppity. You better remember you're still a part of this family. You better not think you get away with doing less around here. Just know I see you. And, like, I get the award, but whatever, you're still you. And it's horrifying. It's horrifying because this is a child or this is a teenager, and all that child wants is their parents' pride. I have known people who have excelled in all sorts of pursuits, and over time they even dreaded winning or excelling because they knew they would have to endure the wrath, envious, small-minded, covert, narcissistic parent. And over time, these gifted children and adolescents may even sabotage themselves or downplay an accomplishment instead of listening to their parents' victimized rant. But what makes it even more difficult is that a child and even in adolescence, they don't understand covert narcissism. And it is so confusing and honestly scary to succeed and have it trigger this big, competitive, resentful reaction. This confusion can dog you into adulthood and leave you feeling almost, I don't know, ambivalent about your accomplishments and sharing, and even feeling ambivalent about sharing them for much of your life. And it may even sap your desire for wanting to reach for bigger things because that constant voice of your covert narcissistic parent will echo for you and undermine what you think you can or even should reach for. It is a horribly painful and limiting legacy. In the workplace, they're not as likely to become the leaders because of their lack of political savvy, and all the charisma and charm stuff means that they often do not escalate to leadership positions. But they are very likely to be your sullen, resentful, brooding, and bitter coworker. They are also often the sort of know-it-all coworker who has all the answers, who criticizes other people's work and contributions, but who doesn't always do a very good job themselves. They are definitely not good team players and will often be quite dismissive of any form of team building or cohesion. You may even sort of try to win them over, but by and large, that often only results in them becoming a bit sort of prickly. They may complain about getting the same amount of work as everyone else, and they sort of bring this general kind of dark cloud into the workplace. But because of their victimized, sort of sullen, petty underbelly, they often do and often will threaten to and actually file grievances and lawsuits when they perceive even an imperceptible hint of inequity. And many times they will file these complaints even when they are working less than everybody else. It's not unusual for them to try and work all the angles and figure out how to cast themselves as a victim and file the lawsuit and get the payout so they simply don't have to work. And at some level, entitled to this kind of payout. In this way, this type of personality pattern can be very expensive for workplaces. Their conduct can poison an entire workplace team and dismantle morale for many, many people in a workplace. You know, it's when, maybe you've said this, I know I have, is that when you say, you know, I really do love working with most people here, and I'm just that person and that person wasn't here, usually covert narcissist, this would work so well. Their resentment and hostility often gum up the work of workplaces, and they gum up teams, and they gum up staff morale. They always feel that people are against them in the workplace, and they're frequently paranoid that people are actively undermining in the workplace, and believe you me, most people aren't taking notice of them. If anything, they're just wishing they would call in sick. Covert narcissism. While similar to that observed in other forms of narcissism, so for example, the usual stuff, the attachment issues we see in narcissism, the potential early traumatic experiences, the inconsistency in the early environment, even the chaos. In covert narcissism, there's often this quest to be noticed by their parents or other significant adults, and then the parents never actually notice them. These are the parents who are deeply distracted, completely uninterested, maybe even detached. And it may also just be parents who are deeply unkind, who will tend to do things like shame and insult their own child. This can also set up covert narcissistic patterns in adulthood when a person experiences this in childhood. The covert narcissists have a much worse self-confidence concept than we observe in the other narcissistic types. And they will often experience psychological issues in their life, such as depression and anxiety. They often did have very difficult, negating, and invalidating early lives. And that fact, frankly, can really pull for real empathy from other people, and rightfully so. But their unwillingness, the covert narcissist's unwillingness to push beyond their history, get therapy, and then add that to the mix, that they keep treating other people badly, it's a very, very complicated mix. As therapists, we often see that when covert narcissistic individuals come into therapy, their presenting issues often reflect patterns such as depression, anxiety, a general sense of dissatisfaction with life, relationship problems, and challenges in the workplace. Now, their negative moods often lead us to believe that they are experiencing a mood disorder or an anxiety disorder. And so as a result, then, with tried and true treatments for depression and anxiety, such as cognitive behavioral therapy and perhaps even a referral for medication. Now, what we find is that indeed many vulnerable or covert narcissists are experiencing significant negative mood states. And the negative moods, like depression and anxiety, are amenable to treatment. And you might see a lift and an adjustment in anxiety or the depression. And then, unfortunately, the other stuff, the chronic disillusionment with life, the chronic sense of victimization, the belief that they are not getting the recognition that they deserve, their ongoing irritability, their general contempt, their almost sort of low-grade paranoia, that doesn't go away. And as a result, it can sometimes take those of us who work in the mental health world even a few months to determine that this is, in fact, more of a covert narcissistic pattern and not depression or anxiety. But if this person, covert narcissistic person, is in your life, you also may not get it for a very long while. Keep doubting yourself, gaslight yourself, and believe perhaps that you're not being supportive enough. Maybe you're not a good enough cheerleader, because no matter how much praise, no matter how much encouragement or how much money or how much opportunity you give them, their anger and their bitterness do not dissipate. And before long, you find that you are throwing mad money after good. So I hope as we keep going through this series on covert narcissism, it's giving you a fuller picture, especially in different settings like parents, partners, and workplaces. Stay tuned. We're coming to the covert narcissistic part 3 punchline, where I'm hoping you'll learn some skills and techniques to manage these personalities if they're in your life. Please subscribe, not only to be a part of this series, but also to have access to all of our many narcissistic videos and narcissistic videos about narcissism, and then hit the bell to get notification about any time we put out a new video, which these days is every day.
All right, I wanted to point out that was very informative, you know what I mean? Because many of us go through our daily lives, you know, we kind of have to deal with family. We kind of have to deal with people at work a lot of times, right? And I think that this is where the kind of relationship or the bonds are at its most peak, you know what I mean? So to examine those, protecting your energy, protecting your space, you know, for those who don't want to change, and just, again, to be aware, right? So I hope you guys are taking notes. But this is part 3 in the last one. I'm not going to be on long today, but I just wanted to, you know, raise awareness of the COVID. I'm taking notes myself, you guys. So, all right, this is going to be part 3. And I think she's going to go tap into some solutions.
Hi, everyone. It's Dr. Ramani, and welcome back to part three of this episode on covert narcissism. So far, you have a good sense of sort of what it looks like, how it might play out in a partner, a family member, or even in the workplace, and sort of some of the sort of passive manipulative techniques that happen that often play more on things like guilt. Many of you may not even recognize them, but, oh, is that what this is? I just thought he's being a brat. You realize his brattiness has a name. Now we're getting close to going to part three of covert narcissism, because I haven't already said enough on this. There's much more. Before we get to that, please hit the subscribe button, and then you can be subscribing to this channel and all the content we have on narcissism and other high-conflict personality styles. Hit the bell to subscribe, and you'll get daily notifications, not just on this series, but on all the content we put out nowadays on a daily basis. So let's go back to talking about covert narcissism. Now, clearly, covert narcissism has a very different feel than the other forms of narcissism. You're not going to see, like I said before, that usual charm, charisma, confidence, trifecta. Their manipulation, while it's very much present, is not as direct as we see in grandiose and in malignant narcissism. They tend to manipulate through their victimhood, their passive-aggressive words, barbs, and actions, and by pulling on your sense of guilt. Yes, they're definitely going to gaslight, and yes, there's definitely going to be narcissistic rage. Their narcissistic rage is most often criticism or someone giving them feedback about how to actually do something rather than to complain about it. Because they say, listen, instead of complaining about that, why don't you do it? Then they are going to get very, very rageful. They also do not present as social do-gooders in the way you will see in communal narcissism. The people who say, look at all the good deeds I do, now give me validation. That's not their groove. Now, their negative moods also differentiate them from the other forms of narcissism. Their vulnerability may confuse you, as you may view their vulnerability as a space where you might be able to connect with them. Now, unlike the other forms of narcissism in which their vulnerability isn't nearly as obvious, you can see it a bit more clearly here. But just when you go in there and you try to connect with them on the basis of that vulnerability, the covert narcissist will fight back, and they'll get really angry and contemptuous about the fact that you're sharing your vulnerabilities or even commenting on theirs. Now, love bombing with a covert narcissist may not be as explosive as it is with the other, you know, forms of narcissism, but it's definitely not that big blow-up, big love bombing. It tends to be quieter. You see fewer grand gestures. But in that quietness, they may actually end up becoming very attuned to you in the beginning of the relationship. And a lot of people mistake that attunement as intense empathy and connection. They sort of really drill into you, and it seems as though they're really seeing you. It's like they're really in your face. And interestingly, many people have said they say yes to the first date because they kind of feel sorry for the covert narcissist because, again, they're not particularly socially skilled or have that sort of glibness and charisma and all of that. So they say yes because it's nice to do. That is how socially awkward the covert narcissist can be in the early part of the courtship process. This is very different than that sort of swagger you see of the grandiose narcissist. The courtship phase itself will look different. Again, that sort of tell me everything about yourself kind of thing. You might find yourself, though, also tending to be a little bit rescuey. It's not so much about the big nights out. You're like, wow, this is so cool. It's also nice and simple, but we listen to each other all the time. You also may not feel the same sense of menace that you would feel with a malignant narcissist. But the rage for a covert narcissist is just under the surface. And they will, interestingly, quite often appear to harbor a lot of anger at other groups. And you'll see it's not unusual in covert narcissism to see that they may hold inflammatory opinions on the basis of race, gender, religion, sexual orientation, nationality, but mostly from a victimized standpoint. So, for example, they may express lots of anger about immigration, affirmative action, about people of color, feeling that these groups have stolen their opportunities. Again, they feel like victims. Or they'll be angry about women who they feel aren't obedient and not taking traditional roles. And it's not unusual for covert narcissists to really sort of take these really antiquated, archaic roles about what gender roles should look like. You're like, wow, I mean, sort of like holy like 1932, but yeah, that's kind of where they are. Now, a key difference between covert narcissism and the other forms of narcissism comes down, interestingly, I believe, to extroversion. Delroy Paulus, who I believe at the University of British Columbia, he put it best when he called the malignant narcissist the disagreeable extrovert. And I think the same kind of thinking could be applied to the grandiose narcissist. I suppose we could kind of call them the charming, disagreeable extrovert. But when we think about the covert narcissist, they are definitely not extroverts. They actually tend to conform to more of an introverted style. They are often anxious when they're in groups, and they derive more comfort from solitude or smaller groups. And it's interesting because this can be very isolating in any kind of a relationship with them. And it's for this reason that people who are in relationships with covert narcissists will definitely feel that sort of damaging impact of isolation, of not connecting with other people, and honestly not having witnesses to how toxic your relationship, as well as the lack of support you might have. And you might feel this in a covert narcissistic relationship more than people might in other kinds of narcissistic relationships. And when a covert narcissist is very controlling, this can be very, very isolating because they may be monitoring your comings and your goings and questioning all aspects of your life while also not having any world outside of the relationship. So it's suffocating and it actually isolating to the point of being dangerous. In families that are run by a covert narcissist, a mother or a father, it's not unusual for the family system to get very isolated. This can actually be very problematic because it means that there are fewer witnesses to the covert person in the family's rage, to their hypersensitivity, and their irritability. And the risk here is that it can really leave the family members feeling isolated, confused, helpless, and definitely unseen. Now, social anxiety is also a major part of covert narcissism. And this is a reason that it almost can trick people initially, because it doesn't have the extroverted, charismatic top notes that we observe in traditionally grandiose patterns. The insecurity we see in a covert narcissistic person is often about sort of social issues and social matters and how they're viewed by other people. So they can be very socially clumsy. And as a result, obviously, because they're so uncomfortable, they may avoid social settings or just be more reticent or shy or avoidant or just hold back in those kinds of settings. And that can definitely throw you off the trail initially in these relationships because this is not the person who's sort of holding court, the raconteur in the middle of the party that's charming everyone, telling stories, and everybody's paying attention to them. They're the ones who look a little bit angry and brooding in the corner of the party. And the social anxiety is a chronic fixture, but it's manifested in any kind of relationship with a covert narcissist as a contemptuous disregard for other people. So they'll write off social gatherings and parties and events as just being a stupid waste of time full of stupid people. This is having this defensive reaction formation like, oh, who wants to be at that stupid party? It is defensive because they're just not comfortable with them, so it's just easier to criticize these parties. Now, this is different than traditional
anxiety. And people who are socially anxious, just socially anxious, but who are not covert narcissists, what we see is that socially anxious people tend to avoid social situations, or they endure social situations with tremendous discomfort. But a person who is socially anxious will not dismiss those social situations contemptuously. They may do their best to hide their discomfort, and you might even look at them and see that they are nervous, but they don't behave in a way that we would consider mean. That's different than the covert narcissist who will be spouting all kinds of judgmental and mean-spirited comments about a situation. A socially anxious person may at times say words or say very self-disparaging things. Like a socially anxious person will say, oh my God, that was such a dumb thing to say. I'm so sorry. And you hurt for them because they feel so uncomfortable. Covert narcissists will not tend to do that. Instead, they will disparage other people. Oh my God, can you listen to this guy just yammering on? He thinks he knows something. And they're definitely not likely to apologize for any of their social transgressions. Now, the covert narcissistic pattern can have a very toxic impact on you. Even from the beginning of the relationship, it is not uplifting to be with a covert narcissist because their negative mood states are so prominent. But over time, the chronic victimhood and the exhaustion of listening to their resentment and frustration and anger all of the time can leave you feeling very depleted. If you do keep falling for their tales of woe and their stance as a victim, you can wear yourself out. And you can wear yourself out because you're constantly trying to reassure them and rescue them and tell them it's all going to be okay. Will end up wasting for you a lot of time, a lot of money, and a lot of emotional energy, and you will have nothing to show for it because they're not going to change. So, and despite how toxic this pattern is, the relationship with the covert narcissist, interestingly, can be very difficult to step away from. And the primary reason for that is often both pity and guilt. For many of you, you got into this relationship or you stay in this relationship because you felt bad for them. You see their sadness or their anxiety and the fact that life, according to them, didn't go the way they wanted, so you may even feel guilty. You want and wanted to fix it for them, and you may even see some of your hurt, heartbreaks and disappointments in them. You might think, gosh, you know, if someone had just been nice to me, it might have turned around for me too. Well, maybe that was the case for you. I can promise you, no matter how many people are nice to them, it's not going to turn around for them because they're so invested in their victim anger entitlement stance. And as always, the almighty threesome of hope, guilt, and fear are at play here. The hope this relationship will get better, guilt for walking away from someone who is down, and fear that you will end up alone if you walk away from this. And at least, oh gosh, this person really needs me to sort of prop them up. So that might help you, and you might feel useful here. But the guilt is very sticky. The covert narcissist, should you decide to try to leave them, they may actually really cry when you decide to leave. Not the crocodile tears of the grandiose narcissist, but really cry. And they'll say quite sadly, but they don't think that they will be able to find someone else. The guilt then pulls you in. The malignant and grandiose narcissist may really manipulate and be quite cruel at the breakup stage, but the covert narcissist may not be able to manage the negative moods around this. And the tears and their very clear incapacity to cope may make it really difficult for you to sort of steal up and leave the relationship, no matter how unkind they have been to you in the past. And trust me on this, despite those tears, they are definitely going to throw more than a few passive-aggressive barbs your way.
And that may also reel you back into the relationship the same way they played upon your guilt during the relationship. These manipulations really work with guilt. Even your compliments can be twisted and passive-aggressive. They might say something that's twisted, like, hey, even though your parents thought you were dumb, I actually think you're smart. Or say something like, yeah, other people may not think you're nice, but I do. And you're like, huh? Like, in that way, they almost mirror their affinity for victimhood to give you victimized compliments. Hey, no one else likes you, but I do. You're a victim, but I'm so good with you. They might say things like, everyone else is against you, but I'm not. And it can set up this strange sort of traumatic bond because you think they may be the only person who cares about you and that gets you, and that can also further isolate you. So it's like this twist of insult plus compliment, and then these other ways that they're saying that no one else gets you, but I do. It is their victimhood pushing up against your desire to be kind, to do the right thing, or even a less than healthy drive that you may have to rescue other people that may keep you in these relationships and keep engaging and explaining long past it ever being healthy. Now, when we look at covert narcissism in a family setting, you may be so accustomed in your family to trying to fix things. And everyone in that family has always been so accustomed to enabling the covert narcissist that it can be very difficult pattern in any meaningful way. What's interesting is if you do stop engaging and stop trying to fix them, they will actually become more sullen and victimized as though you've given up on them. And it can be an almighty struggle to not give in and fall into your old patterns. So, given how difficult and toxic this is, how the heck are you supposed to manage the covert narcissist without getting lost in a vortex of guilt? Frankly, the same way you manage all narcissists. Radical acceptance, realistic expectations, gray rock, not engaging, not explaining, and not that you do not get pulled into the, I think personally, rather dangerous space of letting their, I mean psychologically dangerous space of letting their past difficult history, their childhood history, their family history, be an excuse for their wretched current behavior. The covert narcissist will initially pull out a heavier victim card if you start pulling away. And in fact, covert narcissists often really struggle with abandonment and will often become even more resentful if they sense that you're discarding them. Maintaining good, solid boundaries and not personalizing your negativity is also an important survival strategy in these relationships. As always, being in therapy with a therapist who actually understands covert narcissism is absolutely essential because it will allow you to do the deeper dive on your own issues with guilt and with being a fixer that keeps you in this relationship and runs the risk of allowing this dynamic to devolve, honestly, into a rather codependent dynamic. And relationships with covert narcissists can often have a rather codependent feel. Now, sadly, just as with all narcissistic patterns, this pattern of covert narcissism does not tend to improve significantly in therapy. And it is a pattern, though, that significantly worsens under conditions of stress and disappointment. So when you have a covert narcissistic individual and they're experiencing considerable stress or major disappointment, under those conditions, the covert narcissist actually has their victimhood confirmed, and that enrages them even further. Now, obviously, whether or not you can distance yourself from this relationship is a very individual. either path, leaving or staying, I can promise you this, is going to bring significant challenges. Now, the pattern of covert narcissism can actually resemble many other mental health issues, including social anxiety, depression, post-traumatic stress, and as a result, it can be rather difficult to discern what am I dealing with here. And it's going to take time to figure out. It takes time for me as a therapist to figure out. I've worked with many covert narcissistic clients over the years, and it's taken me months. And by then, though, if it's a relationship, a human relationship, by the time you figure out what it is, the guilt can make it really difficult to distance yourself. As a result, therapy, education, and support become critical tools for helping you make decisions if you find yourself in a relationship with a covert narcissist. Now, let's just bring it down to brass tacks. As I was talking about before, that introversion-extroversion distinction. The covert narcissist, let's put it this way. If the malignant narcissist is the disagreeable extrovert, I think we can say pretty confidently the covert narcissist is the disagreeable introvert. This pattern of covert narcissism is one that has actually raised so many questions on my YouTube channel and social media. And so I do hope that this three-part episode on covert narcissism has really, really clarified what this is, how it affects you, why we get confused about it, the manipulative power of relationships. It's a sticky one. And it is, especially if this is your parent, this is something that can probably be one of the main explanations for why guilt is such a powerful motivator for you. You can understand now how a person can go from having a covert narcissistic, guilt-inducing parent right into a covert narcissistic adult relationship. Thanks again for tuning in. I hope you're enjoying this content, and I sure hope that this video on covert narcissism clarified this rather complex topic. So please, as always, subscribe to this channel.
All right, yes, guys, subscribe to her channel. I'm going to include the credits in the show notes, as you guys always know. So, yeah, very important, vital information, you guys. I tend to say that when it comes to mental health, and our mental health issues, you know, we have been going with generation to generation to where we like to sweep things under the rug. And we, you know, many of our, even our parents or even our grandparents or those before them, you know, nobody really actually got help. Nobody even was really aware, or maybe they were. Who knows? Although, you know, it's just great to be aware, guys, I promise. This is why I titled this podcast, Enhancing Awareness Radio. So I love it. I love it how it's synchronizing together. So one last thing that I want to go ahead and end with as we close out is projection, okay? Projection, projection, projection. So let's look at a video. I don't know if this is – I think this is her, yeah. So projections, all right? So let's listen to projections and why they are important and how I'm pretty sure she's going to give us some solutions, right?
Hi everyone, it's Dr. Romney, and welcome back to this series on the glossary of handbook, a dictionary of all the terminology that you've run into when you're learning about narcissism or narcissistic relationships. I put this series together because these terms are always floating out there, but not everyone is always clear on what they mean. This series is meant to bring some clarity onto these terms and hopefully not only enlighten and inform you, but hopefully even give you techniques for understanding what to do when you're in the face of this. Today, the term we're going to take on is projection. Before you keep going, I'm always going to ask you, if you're enjoying this content or want to know more about this, please hit the subscribe button and the bell to get notifications and to subscribe to this channel to get ongoing notifications about the many videos we post, I guess, on a weekly basis. So let's talk about projection. You look at your partner strangely when he or she accuses you of lying and manipulation. You're a person who's fully aware of your own character flaws, but lying and manipulation are just not things that you do. In fact, you chuckle to yourself maybe in a sort of bleak way, but you do chuckle to yourself and reflect on how bizarre it is that they are accusing you of the very thing that they do. They may accuse you, the narcissist in your life, of lots of odd things, accusing you of being angry when you're not, saying that they think you feel disappointed about something when you're actually fine with it. You may actually think right now, and I'm sure you do, think that I'm describing gaslighting. But the accusation of something out of the blue that is patently untrue is in fact a primitive defense that is called projection. And yeah, there's some gaslighting in there, but it's projection. So let's work backwards a little bit. I'm going to be a little professor for a minute and start with what exactly is a defense. We all have defenses. They protect our ego, and they're designed to keep that uncomfortable and unacceptable and even threatening unconscious stuff under wraps. Freud and his contemporaries introduced this framework of defenses as sort of being these sort of psychological screens and sort of halls of mirrors that kind of twist things to protect our primitive stuff. The fact is that all of us rely on our defenses from time to time. We may lie to avoid sharing an uncomfortable truth about ourselves. We may hold a bizarrely strong opinion about something because it triggers a primitive wound or a primitive conflict. Common defenses include things like denial, rationalization, reaction formation, sublimation, and of course, what we're talking about, projection. My work as a therapist is to work with clients to push through these defenses and give people a safe space to dig deeper because the defenses are like walls you need to get through. Now, not all mental health practitioners fully ascribe to the concept of defenses, and I get that. But however you think of it, maybe we even think of them as ways of thinking. They are a way of protecting ourselves from that uncomfortable stuff that unsettles us psychologically and we don't really want to deal with. So if defenses are normal, when exactly do they become a problem? They become a problem when a person over-relies on those defenses as a way of relating with the world. But these defenses, in essence, become the person's primary way of dealing with the world. Now, let's go back to our narcissists. For narcissists who have such fragile, delicate egos, there is no way that they're going to allow that fragile core to get threatened. So for them, it's all defenses all the time. Projection is the most classical defense of the narcissist. And this is something that's been written about in the granddaddies of the field, Freud and Kernberg and all of them. Now, it makes sense. Projection is deep and primitive, just like the insecurity and the ego vulnerability of the narcissist. Projection happens when a person projects an unacceptable thought or behavior or feeling or an uncomfortable conflict onto someone else. Now, what you've got to keep in mind, and this is the tricky bit, this is not a conscious process. It's a bit like psychologically, again, throwing up, something I've talked about before. This is psychologically getting sick. Any one of you who's ever really, really gotten sick knows that there's nothing you could have done to hold it back. It comes out of you. It happens quickly. And sadly, that's exactly how projection works. The ridiculous, awful, false and confusing words and accusations come out, and you look at these things that are coming at you confused. Like, you're saying, "What? Huh?" However, when you attempt to explain or defend or make sense of them,
because it's unconscious for the person who's projecting onto you, they don't take ownership of you, of it. And the person who's a narcissist will likely start gaslighting you or calling you crazy or paranoid or insane. Projection happens with every single narcissist out there. It's one of the things that's a universal. And it's a built-in part of the narcissistic pattern. Like I was referring to Freud before. Freud, in Freud's early writings about narcissism, as well as the writings of other really famous narcissism theoreticians like Otto Kernberg, they really delve in into how important this idea of projection, this defense, is to understanding the narcissistic personality style. Now, do all of us sometimes engage in projection? Absolutely yes. All of us do it. All of us have those uncomfortable things, those uncomfortable conflicts deep in us that we do accuse other people of. And those, and that defense and all those flips can take place at times when we feel vulnerable, anxious, or even just really fatigued. The goal of therapy, and particularly those kinds of therapies that focus on our early histories, is to resolve those unresolved background issues so we do less of stuff like projection. But for most of us, when we engage in projection and someone points it out to us, we recognize that we may have hurt someone or that we may have confused them. And then we subsequently apologize and empathize with their confusion and just sort of how upsetting that might have been. Narcissists, however, don't engage in that kind of restorative work. They go on to their next favorite defense, which is denial. And then, between denial and projection, they've just doubled their best on everything in the whole universe of projection. Projection bothers us because it's so confusing. It doesn't feel good to have someone tell us we feel a certain way or did something or to have someone tell us that we have a certain intention. You're so jealous of me. Like, I'm not. And it feels worse when you can't have a conversation about the fact that being accused of something doesn't feel good. Now, if you don't know what projection is, or that projection, yet you've been subjected to it, then it all becomes even more confusing. Because if someone tells you that you're angry, and you're actually having a perfectly good day, it can really feel like you've stepped into the twilight zone. But when you recognize that it's projection, then it can really make sense to you. And actually, this is the point at which projection, bizarrely enough, can actually be your friend, especially if you are managing a relationship with a narcissist. Remember that the narcissist is projecting that something that's very uncomfortable about themselves or something that they're feeling onto you. So if indeed their projection is inaccurate. And this is where you've got to be honest, okay? So if there are times when a narcissist may say, hey, I think you're angry, and in fact you are angry, it may in part be, yes, a projection, but it also may be true. So you got to fess up when their projection and your reality actually line up. But when projection takes place and it is patently inaccurate, then instead of gearing up to defend yourself to them or getting into an argument about how wrong they are, take a minute and pause. Pause, stop, and reflect that the thing that you're being accused of is actually reflective of their experience. So it tells you something. It's a piece of data about their inner world. If they're calling you angry, when you are absolutely not angry at all, then they are likely angry. When they accuse you of being jealous and you're not, they're the ones who are jealous.
And this can actually be a bit of a useful parlor trick even beyond that. When they start accusing you of things that really may be very untrue, for example, they accuse you of infidelity or of cheating or likely cheating or some kind of affair or lying, and you have noticed actually that it's their behavior that seems to be changing and maybe even veering in that direction, it may in fact be an indicator that they're doing the very thing, or at least thinking about the very thing, that they are accusing you of. Now, this idea of projection has definitely come into the public consciousness. For example, some of you say in conversation, stop projecting your stuff onto me. Now, so many of us are aware of it when it is happening to us. We recognize that it's a projection, but it's really important to recognize that the projector, narcissist or not, is often actually unaware of what he or she is doing. So while it is annoying as hell, talking about it serves no purpose. So it's important that you don't expend psychological energy trying to explain it and talk about it. Narcissists project to protect themselves, as is the case with all defense mechanisms. It tends to be, though, their preferred defense mechanism. It protects the fragile and insecure ego from unacceptable and shameful stuff. So that stuff gets rejected and then projected on whoever the person who's unfortunate enough to be closest to them or someone who's very significant and a bit of a lightning rod for them. Now, narcissists, because it's sort of this primitively dysfunctional personality style, they tend to over-rely on all of their defense mechanisms, not just projection. Projection just happens to be their favorite. They also have other very popular defense mechanisms, including denial, rationalization, and reaction formation. And reaction formation is when a person takes an overly impassioned or even angry stand about something because it is the opposite of their truth. The tendency of the narcissist to focus almost solely on appearances and superficial stuff is in line with protecting themselves. It doesn't matter to them. It doesn't matter if my internal psychological world is a mess. As long as I portray a good, shiny image to the world, no one will ever know. For those of us experiencing it, it is very confusing to be in the face of projection until we know what it is. Then we are empowered to take the high road and see it as the defensive maneuver it is. Smile a quiet smile within ourselves, as well as have a pang of pity for how fragile the narcissist is, that they have to take those chaotic insides and put them outside. And then there is also the fact that we all sometimes engage in projection. All we can do is catch ourselves, apologize, remain mindful, remain aware, self-monitor ourselves, and always take a moment and attempt to restore trust and fix those ruptures when we are responsible for those things. Projection is confusing. Projection is primitive. But when it happens, we know it. And then that idea that somebody is making accusations about our intentions or our behavior or our thoughts and feelings as though they're some kind of twisted fortune tellers and really hold to their guns that it's true, don't engage. This is really a time to step back, nod politely, recognize what you're in the face of, and really save yourself a lot of trouble by not going into the fires there. Thank you again for tuning in. I hope that this clarified your understanding on projection. If you've ever been in a narcissistic relationship, this is the one term, the one pattern I guarantee that you have experienced. So as always, experience it now. You have a better idea of what to potentially do. Thanks again for tuning in. And if you're enjoying the content you're seeing, please hit the subscribe button or the bell and you will be informed of all of the content we have on this channel. Thanks again.
All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed that. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and close out. And, yeah, I hope you're taking your notes, y'all. Just even in our own personal lives, guys, we deal with this, like, all the time. And, again, it's very important to be aware. So I hope you guys enjoyed all of that as much as I did. So, yep, how to get over sociopath and toxic people. All right, guys, till next time. Peace.
Dealing with a narcissistic. If you have been dealing with a narcissistic, sociopathic, even psychopathic person in life or in a relationship, you've come to the right place. How to get over narcissistic, sociopathic abuse and move forward. We got a whole lot to talk about, deep dive. One love to you beautiful deep divers of planet Earth. I woke up like this all magical and fly, start of the week, and I'm just, that was special. Let's breathe, deep divers, let's go. Woo, breathing in that good ass prana, baby. What are we doing? Raising the frequency, raising the vibration. Take that, take that, take that. Good ass energy, I'm sending you peace. Infinite waters, diving deep once again. Beautiful deep divers, we are here. Another beautiful day, start of the week. If you're watching this video, FaceTiming you right now, deep divers. This week, everything will shift in your favor. Everything will fall into place and everything will work itself out. How? I have no idea. The cat down the road knows that, deep divers. It's going to happen. Timing of your life. Now, someone actually sent me a great message. Great, great, great message. Great question as well. Add me on Instagram, Ralph Smart, at Ralph Smart. So a woman asked, she's like, Ralph, I love your videos. Thanks so much. How can I get over narcissistic, sociopathic abuse and move forward? And I'm like, ooh. You're making me dive deep first thing in the day, and we ain't even had breakfast yet, right? Great topic. I want everybody to hit that like button right now. Hit that like button. Share the video. I'm about to go in. So, how to get over narcissistic, sociopathic abuse and move forward. As someone who has been helping women and men over a decade in this specific topic as well, counseling sessions, I've got a lot of important information to share with you. You see, we often think that it only affects women. It actually affects men too. It can affect anybody. You can get caught in a narcissistic relationship, friendship, connection. You might find yourself around a sociopath. And once you've encountered someone like that, it's not always easy just to move forward and say, you know what, I'm done with this. Because you got to heal. And I'm going to share with you how to do this and how to get your life back and how to move forward so you wake up all magical and fly like myself. And we ain't even had breakfast yet. Can I get a hello? So let me share with you, deep divers, what's helped me along my journey and what's going to help you along your journey. Each and every one of us is going to encounter a narcissistic person, a sociopathic person, even a psychopath. That's what life is all about, different personalities. To the woman who asked me this question, how to get over narcissistic, sociopathic abuse and move forward. I want to tell you this. it first starts with finding out who you are. That's where it first starts. Because once you know who you are, you're going to know your standards, you're going to know your worth, and you're going to know what you're going to be willing to tolerate. You're also going to know what boundaries you need to set up. I always talk about setting up healthy, energetic boundaries. So you are with a narcissistic person, and this is someone who just really, it's always about them. It's never about you. And if you are with a sociopathic person, someone who lacks empathy, they're always trying to control you. They manipulate you. Listen to this. Healing is needed for you. And that involves processing your inner traumas, your unresolved issues, and finding out why you are attracting this kind of person. When we really talk about how to get over narcissistic, sociopathic abuse and move forward, we've got to remind ourselves anybody can end up with someone who is not serving them. It was all good just a week ago. No, it wasn't, no. It was all good like when it first started, right? But then you started to see this person change. They became incredibly narcissistic, sociopathic, no empathy, blaming you for everything, gaslighting you. And like I said, it's not only happening to women, it's also happening to men. Some men get caught up with terrible women who are so narcissistic, especially in this social media culture right now, and very manipulative women, sociopathic women. And anytime you encounter someone like this, someone who is narcissistic, someone who is sociopathic, to move forward, you have to remind yourself to stop blaming yourself. Stop blaming yourself for why it didn't work out the way you wanted it to work out. And remind yourself of someone, if someone does not appreciate your presence, they are going to have to learn how to appreciate you in your absence. Slow motion this side. You better know your worth. Many women and many men attract narcissistic people to them and sociopathic people to them because they are still craving validation. Why, deep divers, are we always after someone? Many times, who is not in our best interest? Why, women, are you after that guy who is paying you no attention, who doesn't care about your feelings? Tell us, why are you after that woman who is so narcissistic? Because there is someone right now in your life who cares about you, who loves you, who wants to be a part of your life, and you have to make, you've got to make space for them. They can only enter your life when you let go of someone who is not serving you, someone who doesn't see your worth. Many people who are so narcissistic, who always want the spotlight only for themselves. And many people think narcissistic people have to be famous and rich. No, anybody can be a narcissist. Anybody can be a sociopathic person. And anytime you're around someone like that, you have to learn how to distance yourself from them. This is how you begin to move forward. You have to learn how to distance yourself from these people. You have to learn how to realize that your true value must always be internal. You must realize your true value is internal. Many people find themselves in sociopathic relationship dynamics because they are externalizing their value. They think that without this person, I can't survive. I can't make it through life. I can't do anything. They give me a definition of who I am. And to move forward, you must give yourself a definition of who you are. Ooh. You better love yourself. You better know your worth. You better get your finances in order. You better get your career in order. You better prioritize your mental health, because once you have stability financially, emotionally, spiritually, you now know your true worth. And you now no longer are willing to tolerate someone who is not worth your time or your attention. Many times you might meet someone who is a narcissistic sociopath. And it's like they're still lingering in your mind. And this is the reason why a lot of people can't move forward, because they have made you dependent on them, told you that without them, you're not going to be anything, that you need them. And nothing could be further from the truth. To get over a narcissistic, abusive relationship and move forward, you must remind yourself the greatest relationship you can have is with yourself. The greatest relationship that you can have is with yourself. The greatest relationship that you can have is with yourself. Learn how to hug yourself. Learn how to become your best friend. Learn how to see that you've got so much going for you. If someone does not see the magnificence that you are, someone else will. We have to remind ourselves the worth our relationship gets with ourselves, the worth our relationship becomes with someone else. Let me repeat that. The worth our relationship becomes with ourselves, the worth our relationship becomes with someone else. Therefore, getting over narcissistic, sociopathic abuse and moving forward starts with having a better relationship with yourself, loving yourself for everything that you are, instead of hating yourself for everything that you are not. Enough's enough. Say no. Walk away. And look them in the eyes when you talk to them. Don't be afraid of anybody. 10 toes down. This is how you can move forward. Oh, you're getting your smile back. Look at you go. So I want to remind you to stop waiting for someone who is never showing up. Stop trying so hard for people who don't care. Because you begin moving forward when you go in confidence, where you feel totally accepted, appreciated, and loved. And this is how you begin to move forward. It's a long journey. It won't happen overnight, because a lot of your power is still with someone else. It's still with him. And you have to get over this. You are in a narcissistic relationship. A lot of your power is still with her. You're thinking that, gosh, she was my everything, even though she's treating me like crap. I need her. No, you don't. What you need to do is move forward, knowing your true worth and knowing that you are enough, you have enough, you do enough. And remind yourself, you have made them out to be better than they actually are. It's time to dethrone them. It's time to stop placing these people on the pedestal. Because why are you trying so hard for someone who doesn't even care? Why are you trying so hard for someone who isn't even there and who doesn't even care? So, deep divers, This is how to get over narcissistic, sociopathic abuse and move forward. It starts with you knowing your worth, realizing there is something better waiting for you, but it can only appear when you let go of what is not serving you. And then just say, feels so good to be alive, baby. Can I get a hello? Beautiful deep divers. I want everybody to hit that like button because a woman out there needs to see this video. I want everybody to hit that like button right now because a man out there needs to see this video. Share this video with a friend. Let's breathe. Breathing in that good ass prana, baby. Make sure you go and get the new book, Deep Divers, Feel Alive by Ralph Smart on Amazon. Now, ralphsmart.com/the book, The Bible of Becoming Your Greatest Version, and Feel Alive Part 2 on the way. Also, go and get the Good Ass Prana shirts at ralphsmart.com/clothes and spreadshirt.com if you're in America. Woo! With a whole lot of heart. One more clothing. Gone by. Here to remind you, Deep Divers, in life, we will encounter narcissistic people, sociopathic people, people who make us really doubt ourselves, who gaslight us. And you have to remind yourself every single day that you didn't come here for that. You came here to shine. Don't allow anyone to take away your smile. Don't allow anyone to take away your peace of mind because you are worthy. Oh, you are worthy, Deep Divers. I love all of you. Peace. Infinite waters diving deep once again. Stay well. Stay healthy. Peace. You. Beautiful. Much love to everyone who's here. I want everybody, hit that like button, share this video with someone who needs it, because a lot of people are in funky-ass, crazy relationships with a narcissist, with a sociopathic person, with a psychopathic person. And I'm here to remind you, you don't have to continue with that. You can let go and move forward in peace, love, and harmony. So leave a comment down below of gratitude and appreciation. Let me know how this video inspired you. Deep Divers, I love all of you. One love. Peace.
I wanted to add, it's a strategy to get out of those relationship, guys. It could be a strategy, you know, because like many of them say, you know, when you show signs that you're leaving, and this is any kind of relationship, you know, not just romantic, but I just, you know, would go back on the many that I've been in personally and, you know, from restraining orders, from assault cases, you know what I'm saying? It gets kind of dark, you guys. But loving yourself, protecting yourself, and loving you is standing up and being strong. In your, all right, being gentle with yourself, your crown chakra, the goddess of Set. I'm pulling cards, y'all. Most of all, standing your ground. Standing up for yourself, y'all. Stand up and be strong. All right, guys. Till next time. Peace.
Find a brand new song before they're gone. Stand up and be strong. Russia.
War is too long, and your rights are all wrong.